Welcome to the Between the Lane Lines podcast, sponsored by the National Interscholastic Swim Coaches Association. Here are your hosts, Jason Polano, Kyle Bedelov, and Kevin Pierce.
Computer.
Okay.
Welcome to the NISCA webcast. My name is Kyle Bedelov. I am the Wisconsin Interscholastic Coaches Association president for my ninth year. I also recently became the records and archive chairperson for NISCA. Today on the show, we have Ron Blanc from Santa Margarita Catholic High School in Rancho Santa Margarita, California. Thank you for being on the show, Ron.
Oh, absolutely. I think we do have the longest school name and the longest city name possible.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Now, I said before we started the show that I did meet you maybe like 3 years ago. And the reason that you're on today is that Tim from the NISCA president said you'd be a great guest for the show. So I just want to start by saying thanks for being on with us today. And it should be a very great topic that we're talking about. So for viewers that don't know you, how did you get involved in swimming?
Well, I swam in high school at a different high school in Southern California than Santa Margarita, because Santa Margarita didn't exist by the time I was in high school, and just fell in love with the sport. But when I left, I swam in college at a community college for 2 years, came back to my alma mater and saw, oh my goodness, I can really help out. And so my brother, who coaches with me, we decided to jump in, and we were back in 1988, we were the Frost-Off boys swim coaches at Modern Day High School, Catholic school in Santa Ana, California. And I still remember splitting a $500 stipend for that very first year. But we got hooked, and it was something that we just see, one of those things in life when you just start doing something and immediately you know this is something that I can do. And so that was, what, 30, 34 years later, and still coaching. We've been at Santa Margarita Catholic High School since 1996. And just have been just having a ball just as we've grown with the sport and seeing our kids do well.
And so swimming in California in your part of the state is in which part of the year?
So we're in Southern California. The entire state is in spring sport. So okay. We don't get going until early February.
Okay. And like most high school swim coaches, that's not your full-time job. I'm hoping you're doing something during the day.
No, yeah, hopefully not. Yeah, hopefully we can't just survive on that. So I do the admissions at my school. It's a private school. Help kids apply to the school and being accepted into the school. So that's my real job.
Yes.
And coaching is my fun part, my fun job.
That's right, fun job. That's the best name for it. And so when will you won't get started until late February, early March?
Right. So that's when our season will begin, but we already are doing meetings with our kids. We are anticipating a very big team this year. And I think this may be a reflection of post-COVID, seeing the numbers being so strong. So we want to start working on some team building activities and meetings already. So we've been doing this for even just kind of fun things, going to a football game together, a high school football game together. I hosted a college recruiting workshop at our school probably about 3 weeks ago. And again, just bringing the entire, you know, swimming community in to talk about this important topic, but more also just to get the kids just connected and together. So we'll be doing stuff throughout the fall and winter before the spring season begins.
And are you allowed to actually do any practicing with them at all?
Yes, we can do practices, and we do some optional morning practices in our state association. We can do some out of season practices. So It's voluntary, so the kids have to be willing to do just morning workouts, because in Southern California, we also have a sport called water polo. And so water polo, this is boys water polo season right now. So they have first priority over the pool during the after school hours. Then girls water polo will be in the winter. So swimming right now, we take that before school block of time.
Sure. So the topic that we're going to talk about today is mental training. And so why don't you just give us a brief overview of some of the things that you want to cover today, and then I'll ask you some questions. And actually, before we get there, why don't you tell us how you got involved with the mental training aspect of swimming before we jump into the topics?
Well, this actually brings me back to when I was swimming in college. And I was, in my mind, a sprinter. I come out of high school, I'm a sprinter, and my college coach the very first week of school says, "Ron, you look like a 400 IMer," which I thought was the kiss of death. And I had not swum. I was a very late starting swimmer. So I just started swimming in high school. So I'm club in high school. Never swam 400 IM. And so now I'm training for it. And I still remember the very first 400 IM that I swam. It was a complete disaster. Pushing off the wall, starting breaststroke, my forearms started to cramp. I didn't think there were muscles in my forearms in which to cramp. I got so disoriented on the back to breast turn, I pushed off into the next person's lane and popped up, looked around, saw that there was the ref wasn't paying any attention because he was eating a sandwich. So I popped back under my lane and I kept swimming. Horrible, horrible time. But I knew that I had to do this at the end of the season. And so I had done some research and learned a little bit about visualization and started doing visualization throughout the rest of the season. And came to the end of the last meet, swam the 400 IM. I had my best time. Didn't hurt. It was easy. And I know that the training played a big part physically, but the mental training that I had done through visualization made a big impact. So this has always carried with me in all the years that I've been coaching.
And so during the process, have you been doing this all the time with all your teams, like from the very beginning, or did it take a while to like ease into it? And did you build it up, or did you just go 100% with the mental training right away?
We started doing visualization pretty much as soon as we came to Santa Margarita. I didn't really do a lot of it when we were coaching at Modern Day, but starting in 96, especially to get the kids prepped for the end of the season, we would do more visualization at the end of the season. But what's happened over the last year was expanding it more into more than just simply at the end of the season. I think COVID brought about the extra need and importance for this, and to be able to reserve time, our weekly schedule, training schedule, to do this. And so this became a part of our routine this past season. And it was so successful that we obviously want to continue to build on it and just keep moving it forward.
Sure. And so, I mean, we're going to break it down a little bit more, but how much time do you devote to this during the week? I don't know how your practices go, but if we do six in water sessions a week, that's 12 hours. Plus if we do two dry lands, that's another 2 hours. So we're already up to 14 hours of practice. If we run two mornings, now we're up to 16 hours of kid time a week. How do you devote, and what percentage of time, or is it different during different chunks of the season? How do you devote that much time, or how do you work that into your schedule, is really what I'm asking.
It probably works out to about 15 to 20 minutes a week. And what we do is it's one day a week we have, and this is something that we can talk about in a bit, but one of the great resources that I learned about, you know, getting help with mental training for our athletes is that local colleges and universities, especially if they have a psychology program, or even better, a sports psychology program, or like a master's in sports psychology and performance, they've got a bunch of students that need volunteer hours at no expense, but they need this to get their credential, to get their degree. And so I partnered with a local university and someone who actually swam for me several years ago. She was getting her sports performance mental training master's. And so she would come out every Wednesday and we'd break up our team into four different groups. And so she would rotate with each group. And so basically it would replace one of the sets that we would do. And so she would work with them for 15 minutes, then would finish, move on to the next group. et cetera, et cetera. So she was able to get to everybody in the course of 2 hours. It was so important that we felt that this was necessary to help our kids overall, that we were willing to take, you know, 15 to 20 minutes a week.
Sure. So almost like if you did stations on Wednesday, it was just really one of your workout stations was go. That's a great concept. That's a great idea. So why don't we just, let's just talk about some of the, you sent me a list of some of the things. So what are your five elements of mental training that you're running through with your team?
Well, kind of looking at when we started doing this and putting it all together, because I was fortunate to be asked to do a talk at the ASCA conference in Orlando a couple of weeks ago. And just kind of putting my mind, it's the five steps was visualization, confidence building, championship mentality, team culture, and actually the most important, which is failure. And talking about failure as, in terms of the failure response, how kids responded to failure, I really felt was the most important, because that's where I think where it was such a paralyzing impact of kids was they were so afraid to fail. And so it's kind of combining all of these components is where our program has been developed, and hopefully will continue to grow in the future.
So I think a lot of coaches will say that they feel like team culture is important, and they feel like they embody that throughout the course of the season and during the off season, like what you described earlier with getting the kids together. I think a lot of coaches, at least the coaches in our area, would say team culture is a little bit easier for them to work on. But there's gotta be buy-in from the kids on that, right? I can be the most team culture person in the world, but if the kids aren't buying what I'm selling, it makes it a little more challenging. So what tips and tricks do you have for just team culture to start with on that point?
Well, a lot of with anything with, I think, kids, especially the teenage group of high school kids that we deal with, it's pointing out how A caused B. And so if you see something that you've been working on with team culture, and now a kid has a great performance because they felt the support of their team, then you as a coach, your job is to make sure that you connect the dots. And you can tell the kid, hey, you know what? You know, I see how well you've been working with your mental training, or yeah, did you see how your teammates were there cheering for you? It's one of the reasons why you swam as well as you did. The more that we can connect A causing B, the kids are going to want more A because they want B. Right. And so if we can connect that's one of the things. Team culture, I think, is also huge with the failure response. Because if you've got a strong team culture, when kids fail, when the kids, you know, mess up, and it's going to happen, or if they just don't have a good swim, if your team culture is strong, they're going to be able to be the safety cushion, the net to hold the kids and keep them afloat once they feel, oh man, we had a disappointing swim. I had a kid years ago that disqualified because she didn't show up for a opening medley relay. And back in those days when she was swimming, she didn't just get disqualified from her other three swims, but everyone on her relay was disqualified for all of their final other three swims. So in one shot, 16 swims got disqualified immediately. And she was broken up. She was just sobbing and crying. But it was the team culture that the kids boosted her up and said, don't worry about it. We're going to get this team next year. You know, you're going to have a great season. Don't let this failure define you. And she ended up breaking our school record at the end of her freshman year. So again, team culture really ties in everything with mental training. But the more that we can, as a coach, connect the kids to help them see that this is happening, then they'll be able to buy in much, much easier.
100%. You talk about failure, and swimming's not an easy sport, first of all. And every race, there's only one winner. I mean, sometimes there's a tie, but there's really only one winner of each race. And so we talk a lot about on our team about controlling what you can control in your 6 feet by 25 meters, our pool's meters. So we always say 6 by 25 meters, right? Because you want to control what you can control. You can feed off someone next to you from the other team, but you can only control what you can control. It's not like football or basketball where I can play defense and stop the other kid from going faster. I can only I can only do what I know how to do. And there's kids who come out and you can tell they're working hard and they're just, for whatever reason, they didn't have a good swim. And we, as adults, sometimes don't handle it the best way. So I think some of this, what you're talking about today, is not necessarily for how you do talk to the athlete about failure, but as a coach, how you can internalize what you're doing, right? There's a lot of times we come home from meets and I'll say, did I have the right lineup? Did we train the right way this week leading up to that meet? Or if we have a big meet and we have a bad performance, was it something that I did that as a coach? So do you and your brother, this will be the best part, is do you and your brother ever talk about that, about whether do you guys question what you're doing and question any failures that you might have as a team, not only in respect of how you talk to the athletes, but how you work with each other?
Oh, absolutely. And I guess that's one of the things. My brother is 1 year and 3 years and 3 days older than me. Okay. And so people think that we're twins anyway. But it's that, you know, growing up together and being on the college swim team together, high school swim team together, and going through the coaching, it's almost like we have ESP because we talk to each other all the time. And self-reflection is so important. We'll take a look at the end of every season too and go, okay, so how did taper work? You know, how did the kids do this year? And we're constantly looking at some of the things that we did. Was this helpful? Was this a detriment? It's the same thing with the mental training. You know, it seemed to be really, really good during the season, but we still wanted to talk about it and say, okay, did this work? And if the answer was yes, then we want to continue this in the future. I think that's a part of the good coach. I remember hearing, she was a basketball coach, Pat Riley, mentioned one many, many years ago when he was winning championships with the Lakers. He said, you know, the best coaches is not going to, best coach won't have all the answers, but the best coach is going to keep searching for those answers. And I think as coaches, if we can continue to be striving for improving ourselves, that's how we can be, you know, honestly looking at failure from our own perspective as a coach, because as coaches, we will not be perfect. We're going to be making mistakes. It could be a lineup. Oh my goodness, why do we put this kid swimming this leg on this relay? We could have put her in this or this, whatever. And so it's a constant reflection, but I think that's what makes the best coaches.
Sure. So two of your other five elements, one of them is confidence building. So what do you have exercises for that you, we talked about connecting points A to B for the result. And one of the things that I talk about is events in life happen. How you react to them determines how you're going to feel about it, right? A great swim has a great feeling towards it, but the swim itself, it's not positive or negative. It's how you react to it. So what kind of things are you doing for confidence building? Because right now in Wisconsin, it's high school girls season, and confidence is one of the things, the boys struggle with it too, but I'd say from because it's a separate season, I can't compare them at the same time, but confidence is a big thing. If you've got it, you're probably going to swim well. And if you don't have it, there's a good chance you're not going to swim well. And you've been around enough kids that when they walk up to you and say, you say to them, how are you going to swim? How are you going to swim this race? And they'll say something like, well, it's going to be awful. And then they walk up to the blocks and it's already too late to even have a conversation because they're blowing the whistle. You just know the outcome is not going to be, because they've already put them in that mindset of failure before. So what kind of things are you doing at practice or at meets to work on confidence building?
A couple of things. One, I heard this from Greg Meehan, coach of Stanford, at a talk a couple of years ago, and I thought, oh, this is brilliant. He actually builds in failure into his sets at the start of the season so that he can take the kids down to a point where they realize, oh, okay, I failed. I didn't make the base. I didn't make the interval. But then they realize, okay, the season isn't defined based on just them failing at the beginning of the year and then building them back up. And so then what we'll do is we'll then build sets, build confidence, and build success. So we put in pretty difficult bases, but we do it knowing that the kids are going to make it. If they're going to give it their best shot, they're going to make it. And then congratulate them and again, connect the dots for them. Hey, you know, that was a tough base. That was a tough send off. You guys made it. You made hundreds on 110, 105, whatever it was. And again, showing them how they're improving. One of the sets that we do is we'll do this a couple times during the year where it's you swim 150, it's all 50 freestyles, 50 free on 50 seconds. Then it's a 50 on 49 seconds, and then on 48. And you keep going until you can't make the base. And keeping track, okay, hey, you made it to 33 seconds, for example. Okay, then the next time, hey, you got down to 31. Okay, even though it's just two more, that's a huge, huge improvement. And so building the confidence from the sets. Another way is how we talk to our kids. You know, there's two different ways of saying something that is of critique and criticism, because we have to, as coaches, we have to do this because we got to correct stroke. We've got to correct attitudes, but how do we do it is the way that is really, I think, defines as the great coaches. I connected this with a movie from, it was Tom Hanks, A League of Their Own. And this is about the women's first professional baseball league. And this one outfielder, she misses the cutoff throw and he starts yelling at her and screaming at her. And she starts crying. And that became the famous line, "What, are you crying? There's no crying in baseball." Yes. And the second time this happens, though, as he improves as a coach, he's trying to control his anger and frustration, and he does a better job. It's not perfect, but it's still the same message. But she's leaving the field with a smile because she knows that her coach has got her back.
Right.
And so how we do this is another way of building confidence. Another thing, this seems kind of silly, but it's talking about the small stuff, things that have nothing to do with swimming. It's a way that we can get to know our kids. And you talk about, oh, how was, you know, you took a big math test today. How did that math test get? Oh, it was your birthday. You know, what'd you guys do as a family? Silly things, things that don't have anything to do with this of swimming. But if the kids see that you as a coach have their back, meaning that you're more interested in learning about them as a person than how many points they're going to score for your team at a championship meet,
right?
Then they're building confidence in you as a coach. And they're building confidence in themselves because coach cares enough about me to learn about me as a person. And so a couple of those things can hopefully help out. And it's always a process because kids can go confident. And then 2 seconds later, now they're all depressed because they had one bad swim. And some kids are just on this roller coaster. But talking about the small stuff, building them up, positive critique, those are just a couple of ways that we do it.
Yeah, I try to make it a habit of every day checking in with every kid, right? What, just exactly what you said. And years when we had 38 or 40 kids, sometimes it was a little tough and you can't get around to every single kid because you're running your little group of IMers or distance kids or whatever. But the goal is to make sure that you do touch base with every kid every day, because maybe grandma's sick, is in the hospital. Maybe they broke up with their boyfriend. Maybe their dog had to go in for shots and all those things. And if you act concerned, not act concerned, but if you are genuinely concerned, because acting and genuine are two different things. If you're genuinely concerned, I appreciate you saying that, because that it's a hard skill to have, but if you make a mental note to check in with kids every single day, that's always a good thing to do.
Well, and you nailed it too about being genuine. Kids can see ungenuine adults very, very easily. It's amazing that that's a superpower that they have.
Yes, it's weird because adults can't always see it in other adults, but no. Kids can see the adults just something fierce. I had a girl who's now in college now who during the summer between junior and senior year was going on a musical trip to Ireland, right? And just happened that my daughter was in college and was studying Ireland for a whole month. My wife and I decided to go to Ireland to go see her, and because I'd never been there. And the second to last day, unbeknownst to me, the high school choir or the high school orchestra was at the same hotel that we were. And I purposely went out of my way to go say hi to her, because what are the odds that you're going to run into one of your swimmers across the globe? And it's those connections that then that senior year at the banquet, it shows up in the slideshow. You know what I mean? All those things that they seem small at the time, but really mean something to the kid, and you're making that connection. And if that's what builds confidence, then we should be a really confident team. And the last one you had on the list was visualization. So what kind of things are you doing? I always imagine visualization. We would give the kids a stopwatch and make them start it, and then have them close their eyes and try to visualize the race, and then stop the watch when they thought they were going to finish the race and see how well they could time the race out in their heads of how far they're going. Is that the type of visualization you're talking about?
That's one of the ways. And this is a technique that the person that was coming in from the university introduced. Kids would lay down flat and would, you know, picture them swimming their race, their particular race. And when they would finish the race, they would raise their hand up, and then we would time it and then compare the time that they thought that they were swimming, or maybe even their goal time, with the actual time. So that's one. And it's amazing how, as kids did this more, they were getting very, very close to their actual time that they wanted to swim. The other visualization, and this is the one that I've been doing for years, is sit them down and do a combination of breathing and relaxation and then visualization. And this is something from my very, very limited psychology education. I think it was Psych 100. But I remember reading about the subconscious mind throws so much negative stuff at ourselves. We are constantly bombarding ourselves with negative messages. You're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not tall enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not fast enough. Whatever it is, that this visualization is to use our consciousness and to provide a lot of positivity and positive message to hopefully overwhelm the negative stuff that our subconscious tells us. So we sit the kids down, we have them sitting upright, close their eyes, going through then a breathing technique, just, you know, breathing deep from the diaphragm, deep in their gut, you know, holding it, letting it out nice and slow, do this several times, not only to get their heart rate down, but breathing is obviously so important with swimming. Once that their breathing is done, so they're more relaxed, I then walk them through a visualization of a relaxation technique, starting from, I tell them, I want you to feel this cool wave of relaxation starting in your big toe. And it's going up through the base of your foot. Now it's going up through your ankle and your calf and your knee, all the way up until their entire body is relaxed. Then once their breathing is good and they're relaxed, then I start walking them through like the perfect day of swimming. And from, let's say it's their championship meet, I'll walk them in. Okay, I want you to picture yourself walking onto campus that day and seeing your friends and just being so excited about the swim meet that's going to be coming up in a couple of hours. To, okay, now it's time. You've been excused from school. You're heading onto the bus. You're getting on the bus and you're, again, hanging out with your friends and your teammates, and you're getting excited about that. All the way to going to the meet itself, putting on their tech suit if they're going to be swimming in a championship meet. Stepping to the blocks, listening to the starting command, the dive, the entry, the breakout, the first turn, the finish, everything, and then concluding with their time that they want. And everything is perfect. Everything is the way they want it to be. So this is what I did when I was swimming that infamous 400 IM, because I had swum it so many times, so many times in my head successfully. So by the time I actually got to it, my body, because my mind had already convinced myself that I was good to go. And I had seen myself swim it so well, so many times, you know, getting my best time, not feeling fatigued, finishing on the right stroke, that hopefully this will be what's helping the kids step into the championship meet feeling more confident, because they've, again, seen themselves be successful so many times.
So homework assignments for visualization, things that they can do on their own? Or is it, do you think that once they leave the pool, they're done with it? Because in my mind, this would be something that you need to routinely practice on a regular basis. And sometimes it might take some time outside of practice to do.
We'll give them some guidance to do this on their own. I think it is better when you have someone guiding you, because if you focus on the person's voice, then they're going to be able to pay attention better. If you're just trying to do this on your own, it is going to be a bit of a challenge, but they can still be going through the breathing techniques. They can still be doing the relaxation techniques on their own. We will have them go through goal setting as part of our mental training program. And the goal setting is another part of setting a very high bar. And I think that's, you know, we're talking about that one of the concepts was championship mentality. I heard Caleb Dressel talk right after the medley relay of the Olympics. U.S. just won the gold. They just set the world record. And he was being interviewed by NBC. And he said, we specifically talked about the world record. I think his words were, we didn't want to back down to talking about the world record. And I think sometimes in society, we're so afraid of setting high expectations for our kids, for our athletes. Because we're afraid that this is going to create anxiety and stress. But the flip side is if we set the bar so low, then there's nothing for them to really celebrate if they achieve it, and they're not really doing anything. So we do talk about setting goals that are pretty high and not, again, failure if you don't make them, but we want them to be having kind of the big picture in mind and having big dreams.
So if I look back on past couple seasons, I guess I'm doing some of these things. I don't even know that I'm doing it is what I'm telling you is that. So we, our boys team last year, we got to about the midway point of the season in the medley relay. One of the boys said, Coach, what's the state record? And I said, you know, I don't know. I didn't know what it was off the top of my head. So I said, I have to go look it up. And I said, all of you have to drop like 1.75 from what you're going right now to break the state record, right? And he looks at me and he goes, "My coach, that's not a problem." And I'm like, "Okay." And so we didn't tell anybody anything. Like, we just went about our business, because that's the point that you're talking about. As soon as you start saying outside of your circle, then it sounds like you're humbly bragging about what you're going to do. So we kept it amongst ourselves and we talked about it on and off. We didn't break the state record, but we had the third fastest time in state history and we were the state champs. And it was probably because we talked about it enough and we mentally were prepared to go that fast. And I don't necessarily know that if he hasn't come up to me halfway through the season and say, "Hey, what's the record? I think we can get him close to that," that we actually would have put ourselves in that condition, that mindset to be the state champions in that event.
Oh, absolutely. It's something that we actually, because it's an advantage about going last. So we're in the spring, but we will look at the state results from high schools from across the country. And when we have our team retreat at the start of the year, we're talking about what did South Lake Carroll High School do in Texas? What did Carmel High School do in Indiana and Sacred Heart in Kentucky? And we're looking at all of these because we want the kids to have that big picture.
Sure.
And to see that it's, you know, because I think, yeah, sometimes you can just get so, you know, enmeshed in just a small little, you know, swim community, small team. But if the kids have that big picture and they can dream big, you know, yeah, you're not going to win a national championship, but who knows what you can accomplish if you have these bars set so high.
Well, and we were like, I think we were like 30th in the nation. So for us, that was a huge deal. So, so I would assume that similar to tapering is not the same for every athlete. Is the mental training and the conditioning that you're doing with them, is it the same for everybody, or do you have certain tweaks and things that you do? Like, we will do some, our taper will be a little bit different by individual and by group. So our distance kids may hang on a little bit longer and then train them a little bit differently individually. Is it the same package for everybody, or is there individual pieces that you're doing for certain kids?
Well, I kind of think of it as the actual plan is the same for everybody, but the implementation is going to be unique and customized. So we'll all do the visualization. We'll all talk about goal setting. But when it comes time to actually interacting with the kids, I think, and honestly, this is where I believe that coaching is all about. It is our ability to do our mental training with kids on a one-on-one basis, because every kid's going to be different. Their needs at certain times of the year are going to be different. And this is the true art and beauty of what we do as coaches, is being able to, if we know our kids, and I think this is where it comes from, if we know our kids well by those small conversations, those silly chats, those, you know, working with their technique and working with goals, we're going to get to know those kids. So when it comes time for a big meet, and one of the things I demonstrated was I got to the finals, my CIF championship last year. I had four girls that made the top 16 in the 200 freestyle. All four were totally different. In fact, one kid was a nervous wreck, just absolutely just, she actually told me, Coach, I am so, so nervous. And she was a very high caliber kid and really accomplished swimmer, but she was extremely nervous. Second kid was really angry. She was angry at me. She was angry at me because I put her in an event that she didn't want to swim. She wanted to do something else. The third kid was totally, I'm good, Coach. I got it. And then the fourth kid was, she was a freshman, and she was literally walking around the pool deck like the deer in the headlights, just like, where am I? What planet am I on? And so as a coach, how do you address each of these four kids differently and supply them with what they need to help them for whatever the confidence situation that they had? And so I think this is where we as coaches really get a chance to shine, because if we know our kids, we'll have the tools to be able to talk to the kid who's nervous and say, okay, where is this coming from? And this basically was a fear of failure. The one who was upset with me, I just basically gave her some time to cool off. And she came back and she said, oh, I'm sorry, I was acting this way. And no worries, just take this anger now and apply it towards your next event. And she ended up winning her race. So that was awesome. The kid who was all good, you still had to check in with them, but it was just real quick. It was just basically a thumbs up, you good? And she was fine. And then the fourth kid, talking about those little things to talk about, that's, she couldn't handle, you know, the big meet, the stress of the meet. It was, so I just started chatting to her about silly stuff and then make sure she actually got to the block.
That's awesome. I think that wraps up what I have on my list. I usually, is there anything you want to conclude with on the mental training piece?
Only to say that, you know, as we as coaches, mental training is much, much more than just simply meditation or visualization. It really is, as I started looking at this, this is everything that we do as coaches. It's all the, you know, yes, we've got great technique, we've got great sets, we can give up, great talk to fire the kids up. But this is all the things that we do as coaches that really makes a difference with the lives of these kids. So I think this is the funnest part about coaching is this part.
Well, that's awesome. So I usually, with most of my guests, and you probably don't know this because you haven't watched any of the previous shows, I usually end with a bunch of questions. And they're just like one word answers. Like the first one is, what's your favorite high school event?
200 free.
The 200 free?
Yeah.
Your favorite race that you've ever watched in person?
Ooh. Men's 200 breaststroke at the 2017 NCAA D1 Championships. Will Lacone, 147, taking 5 strokes a lap. That was pretty impressive.
What is the toughest high school event?
500 free.
500 free?
Yeah.
Who is your coaching mentor?
Rick Rowland, head coach at Cal Baptist University, definitely would be. Definitely.
And what's your relation to him?
He was the first swim coach at Santa Margarita. And okay. Then after he got the job at Cal Baptist, then my brother and I were able to take over. Plus, he was at my wedding.
What is one thing that you would change about high school swimming? And this would be an interesting one, because around here we have a whole makeup of, in Wisconsin, because we don't have prelims finals. We have a state qualifying meet that's the week before, and you can only qualify that day, and the state meets the following week. So when I have guests on, it's usually about the tournament series for us.
Well, if I had to say one thing, this would be kind of a really big picture one, but if all the high school seasons for swimming in the United States were all in the same season, and then that there could be like a national meet to wrap it all up. having everybody in the same time would be really amazing, because this, I think, would really highlight the amazing talent that swimming is in the United States for high school.
I think your state's the only one who does spring.
Yeah, we're pretty much it.
Well, and I can see the reason, because you can swim a lot of your meets outside, right?
I don't think there's a single indoor pool in Southern California. High school.
Yeah. Okay. What's your go-to catchphrase when you're on deck, when you're talking to the kids? Something that you say a lot, or maybe in this case, what your brother says a lot.
Oh, that's a tough one. Believe in yourself.
That's a good one. The last one is one swimming person, living or dead, that you'd want to meet.
You had actually mentioned Rowdy Gaines. I think that he would be an absolute hoot to actually get to meet and get to know and talk to.
Yeah. Even if you could just spend a half an hour sitting in front of him and just chit-chatting about stuff like we're doing now would be just fantastic. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, Ron, I appreciate you spending this 45 minutes to an hour with us today. It was great to talk about mental aspects and training of swimming. I wish you the best of luck this upcoming spring for you with your boys and girls team.
Thank you so much, Coach. Thanks for having me, and best of luck to you too.
Thank you very much.